हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 33. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Thus the Supreme Lord, appearing like a human being to perform his pastimes, imitated the ways of human society. He enjoyed pleasing his cows, cowherd boyfriends, and cowherd girlfriends with his beauty, words, and actions." Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, "In this way, Krishna did not directly enjoy with the wives of the brahmanas, but he did enjoy with the wives of the cowherd men. This is the intention of this verse. Lila Naravapu means that Krishna had a human-like body for expressing his pastimes. It indicates that because of the prominence of the Lila Shakti over other Shaktis, such as Satya Sankalpa Shakti, fulfillment of his desires, the pastime with the Brahma's wives did not culminate in direct enjoyment. Having the cows, cowherd men and women follow him by his form, words, and actions, he increased their bliss and enjoyed himself." Gopi here refers to the young gopis rather than those endowed with parental affection because of the time and context of the verse. Verses 38 to 52, right? So the context here, well, he mentions the time and context that always has to be considered. That's why words are for conveying. But the point is you have to see the context on what exactly they're conveying. Because words have their literal meaning. So that, of course, has to be seen. But you have to see the context because many times the words have many ways they can be applied. Right? And so if we just take what's the first one that Mr. Monier Williams gives us, then we may not end up actually getting a proper translation. Verses 38 to 52, the Brahmana's self-condemnation. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, "After the return of their wives from Krishna, the Brahmanas engaged in the performance of sacrifices began to regret their sinful activities in refusing food to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They could finally understand their mistake. Engaged in the performance of Vedic rituals, they had neglected the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had appeared just like an ordinary human being, and asked for some food. They began to condemn themselves after seeing the faith and devotion of their wives. They regretted very much that, although their wives were elevated to the platform of pure devotional service, they themselves could not understand even a little bit of how to love and offer transcendental loving service to the Supreme Soul. They began to talk among themselves. To hell with our being born Brahmins. To hell with our learning all the Vedic literatures. To hell with our performing great sacrifices and observing all the rules and regulations. To hell with our family. To hell with our expert service in performing the rituals exactly according to the description of the scriptures. To hell with it all, for we have not developed transcendental loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond the speculation of the mind, body, and senses." The learned Brahmins, expert in Vedic ritualistic performances, were properly regretful, because if one does not develop Krishna consciousness, all discharge of religious duties is simply a waste of time and energy. Right? This is extremely, extremely important point, is that the religious activities are the method recommended in the scriptures, how you worship the Supreme Lord, but that's just it. It's for worshiping the Supreme Lord. Following them without worshiping the Supreme Lord is, as it says, simply a waste of time and energy. That's it. It's not that on their own. Well, at least, you know, he's a nice guy. Okay, if you're looking at the material, better he's a nice guy than a nice guy. But if you're looking at spiritual is, it's either Krishna conscious or it's not. Right? So then the anxiety of the wives were that when they go back, they'll be rejected by everybody and not given shelter because they've broken, you know, seemingly the religious principles. But we see as soon as you put it in the context of Krishna consciousness, all that becomes adjusted. Because actually it was the family members were not religious. Because you're supposed to worship the Supreme Lord. They didn't. So then their expectation of the wives following the mundane religious principles, now that's not appropriate. Because the actual thing is you're supposed to worship Krishna. So therefore, they're going and offering to Krishna is exactly what the husband should have done. Right? It should have been the husbands then with their wives, because if they're going to do a ritualistic ceremony properly, then they do with their wives. So they should have then taken their wives, taken all the foodstuffs out there, and then served Krishna and his cowherd boyfriend. That would have been the appropriate religious reaction. Right? But they didn't do that. So that's the point, is they were wrong. Not that the wives broke the religious principles. They were wrong. Does that make sense? Yes.
We see here with the wives and with the brahmanas, it's a group surrender.
Yes.
Which is kind of rare, because usually everybody on their own level of development. Mm-hmm. So we see all the ladies surrender and then all the brahmanas surrender.
Yes. But it is one of the things. Remember, we'll see it come up when it was describing the different kinds of gopis in the rasa dance, then they're either groups or individuals.
Right.
So group surrenders also, it's common. Sages at Dandakaranya, the personified Vedas, like that, the Devis, like this, they would be groups. So because they associate together, they think, they contemplate, therefore then they come to the same understanding. Like that. So it's not an uncommon thing. Because Krishna, you know, appreciates when people work together and function in a group. So it won't be a problem. But the point is even if there's not a group, an individual on their own can become Krishna conscious. So that's why either it's having in a group or alone, but in any case everybody is able to come to perfection. So it's not a strange thing. Because they all think
strange.
No, but they all think together that they're so karmakandic, and then when they all see the mistake, then discussing amongst them, they can see how that was wrong. And the wives, they always discuss amongst themselves about discussions on Krishna, so then they get elevated together.
It's like when you see Chinese yatras coming to Mayapur.
Yeah, they do everything together.
Yeah. And they're all ecstatic and smiling.
Yeah, yeah. 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 Okay. Yeah, so you do have that kind of group mentality. You know, so it's just a matter of, are you part of a community or are you an individual that is part of a community?
Oh, what comes first?
Yeah, it's just kind of like that. So if they see themselves as we're Brahmins, and so therefore then it's natural what's going to be. It's just like one devotee, I think his name's Matsyavatar, Italian. You know, the architect, and I think he runs his own school like that. Not very well known or talked about, but he one day bumped into the devotees, sat with them, discussed all different kinds of things, you know, very soberly and very exactly in that, and the devotee answered all the questions, so he was convinced about devotional service, I think at that one sitting. And then he went back home, and then they were from, you know, very traditional Italian family, you know, the grandmother's there, and so then they cook, they all eat together. No question that somebody's upstairs, someone's at the television, someone's not. They all sit, and, you know, they'll dress properly, come down to dinner, you know, sit there, proper conversations. And so then while they're there, then naturally people say, you know, what's happening to them in the day or what was interesting or something that they thought about. So it'd be very much as a group, they want to hear what everybody else is thinking and feeling, how they're experiencing. So at some point it got around to him. And then he had mentioned how he met the devotees and then how they went around all the questions and this and that. And he went through all the different points and all that. And he says, you know, so I'm thinking that I would like to, you know, take up this Krishna consciousness like that. You know, because it's being done in a sober way. It's not, you know, the, you know, how you say...
rough and ready.
Yeah, over the top, you know, throw everything out and completely dive in and then go, what am I doing here? Then jump out. You know, not one of those kind. You know, this is the, you know, really, how you say. So then after he said everything, you know, and explained everything, I think that, you know, family members asked questions and this and that. And then when he said that he wants to, you know, take up Krishna consciousness, then the grandmother, who's like the, you know, head of the family, she says, well, if you think it's valuable to join, we'll all join. So I think it was like 15 family, but then they all became devotees. Like that. They all started chanting, they all started reading, you know, everything like that. And being an Italian, it's an advantage because it's easy to cook, you know, vegetarian Italian, so hey, it works. Right, you know, if they were Chinese or French, it's a little more difficult, but, you know. But, you know, it's easy. So you do have that kind of thing where they identify so strongly with the group that then they join as a group.
Doesn't happen in Scandinavia much.
No, because how would you get to get a group would be like 100 kilometers, you know, like that, because every 1 kilometer is a house, you know, so. Yeah, no. Yeah, it just depends upon the nature of the... You know, it's like you have herd animals and you have individuals. Like tigers, they're individuals. They're never in a group. While lions, they'll be in a group. Or elephants are in a group. Or, you know, so it just depends on, it's the nature. You know, so it's just, you know, whatever one's background is, it makes more sense or not. You know. Yeah, because there's individuals who are never part of any group. Then there's individuals who will be part of a group, but they're still very much an individual. They just are part of it at times when it's similar. And then there are those who, they do everything together, right? You know, they can't not do it together. Yeah, so it's just... Yeah. Yes, so you see it's reconciled when you add Krishna. As soon as you add Krishna to the equation, Krishna consciousness, then all the seeming breakage of religious principles by the wives is not anymore actually a breakage of principles. Because it's functioning for the higher purpose of surrendering to the Lord. And then seeing that, then it would be. But if they're materialistic and don't see on that platform, they only see on that religious platform, you know, or whatever their pranamoya kind of concept is, then they'll see it as you're breaking the religion of that group rather than your, you know, the Shastras for surrendering to the Lord. They surrendered, so that's actually, they're doing everything, but on these higher levels. No, only do what the husband says. Yes, that's there, as long as the husband's directing in Krishna consciousness. If the husband's not, then one has to be Krishna conscious.
So that's why they're saying to hell with, because the Purusharth and Kratvartha are actually swapped. So
yes.
Going the wrong way with it.
Yes, yes. Because they've taken the Kratvartha and made it the main thing. Yes. Right? They've taken the secondary and elevated it to the position of the primary. So a very important aspect. Because here you see people who are religious then saying that. That doesn't mean they're not going to perform their religious duties. But now they're going to perform them to please Krishna. So when we say that one gives up all responsibility, that means you give up all responsibility from the material platform. Now the same duties are performed only to please Krishna. Does that make sense? So the grihastha doesn't now stop, you know, taking care of the house and everything. But before he was taking care, because it's his house, it's his family, it's his facility. He's the king of his castle. Right? But then it comes to the point is, no, it's Krishna. So then it's being dealt with just for Krishna. That's the meaning of giving up responsibility. Now, if on that all the responsibilities he's doing is simply unnecessary, then they may be given up, you know, externally. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. It's what matches. Like we see the context of the verse, then it says what is actually happening. So he's not enjoying with the wives of the Brahmins. He's not enjoying with the elder gopis, only the younger gopis, though it says the cowherd women. So by saying that, it excludes the wives of the Brahmins, but also by saying it, then it also excludes the, by the context, the elder gopis. Right? Because they're not on the same level as the cowherd boys. His cowherd boyfriends and the cowherd girlfriends. Right? So even though they're girls, they're not in that context. So, yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The Brahmanas then came to their senses and began to feel great remorse. They thought, 'We have sinned, for we have denied the request of the two lords of the universe, who deceptively appeared as ordinary human beings.'" Srila Sanatana Goswami elaborates, "By the power of association with their wives who attained the mercy of the Lord, their husbands came to their senses. This verse and the rest of the chapter glorify their wives. After this incident, they repented, because the husband's crooked attitude was destroyed." Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Taking note of their wives' pure transcendental devotion for Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and seeing their own lack of devotion, the Brahmanas felt most sorrowful and began to condemn themselves." Right? So if they just saw the glory of their wives, so they were devotees, then it would just be about the glory of the wives and how nice it is they could come up to that standard and everything would be wonderful. But here, as they see that the elevated position of their wives and how degraded they are in this understanding, means, yes, they're following the religious principles, but in contact with the Lord, then what's the point of that? Because it's selfish. So the point of religious principles is to do the duty because it's supposed to be done. Right? If you're doing it because of the benefit you'll get, you know, but that benefit is something to be shared, then that is there. It's a step below. But if it's just about what benefit you'll get, then that's the lowest. You understand?
It will actually be contaminating.
Yes. So even though you're doing dharma, you're situated there, you do all those things, then if you're seeing the benefits you'll get and then how everybody will, you know, how you can take care and everybody will be happy, that's pranamoy. You're one step below. It's yourself, then it's anamoy. If you see by doing these things with detached, I'll become freed from material entanglement, it brings it up to vijnanamoy. When you do it because this will please Krishna, the results of Krishna, then it becomes anandamoy. So you can be performing the duties or the activities of one level and be situated on another. But since these things being mixed is difficult to understand, therefore there's recommendations of how it's done. Right? So what's recommended is situated on the platform of Dharma performing bhakti as a beginning, but actually ultimately situated on the platform of bhakti, and you're performing religious activities to express that bhakti. Does that make sense? So that's what's there. So pranamoy and anamoy are never really considered seriously within the Vaishnav context. One may start there, then that's fine, but as quickly as possible you try to establish yourself in goodness on the platform of Dharma, and from there get to pure goodness. And how will you do that? Simply by the endeavor for pure goodness. Right? That's how you'll get yourself there. Because the idea is if you're endeavoring for pure goodness, then when you're not on pure goodness, then if you fall back to goodness, it's actually easier. Right? Yes.
Sometimes we make this point, but then actually we judge it by the externals, and it's actually, even though it looks like dharma, it's actually pranamoy.
Yeah,
no, because the mentality is wrong, right?
Just as a side point, at least for men, if you wear the cheddar on your other shoulder, it's better for your heart. Yes. Yeah, so this is the movement all about the condition of the heart, so therefore it's one has to take it more seriously. Yeah.
So we have symptoms of Dharma and actual Dharma, right?
Yes, no, we may have the mentality. That's why we're saying is that there's the activities where they're situated, and there's the mentality. You know, just like the four Kumaras, they're performing activities of Vijnanamoy, but they're absorbed in devotion to the Lord. Right? They were there at Vijnanamoy, then coming in contact, or actually they're on the spiritual level of Anandamoy, not the transcendental or devotional. And then from there, then they came across. So you do have wherever you're situated, but you try to bring your consciousness up to devotion. So you can be performing a higher activity with a lower consciousness or a lower activity with a higher consciousness. You try to make them match at some point. You know, it's just natural. It's more comfortable, more straightforward. Does that make sense? Yes.
Can we say that the reason why these brahmanas, they can benefit from the association of their wives is because they are on the level of the jnani, so they can actually appreciate the development of their wives?
That's there, but it's you have the aspect that just by association with devotees is how they get qualified. So it's not actually their material qualification, because you see, they're come in contact with the cowherd boys, and they're not appreciating. So therefore they can't get any benefit. But their wives, then somehow or another, seeing the action and devotion and seeing their behavior, then by that association, then they can start to appreciate. So bhakti will come from bhakti. So it's not that they have a material qualification that makes it available like that. So it's just because by getting good association, one progresses in spiritual life. That's why association is actually the most essential thing. Right? The argument over what you're doing, this, that, that's not the actual point. But at the same time, as we see, is these points must be done to please Krishna. So if one uses this to see, we don't have to follow all the Vedic, we can just follow the modern, then it's just the same thing in a worse condition. You know, instead of being here, to hell with our being born Brahmins. You know, we have to say, to hell with our being born Malechas. You know, so it's not sounding quite as good, because it's the same thing. It's not that, oh, we can give up the Brahminical, so now we can be Malechas. No, you have to give it all up. You know, to hell with our learning all the Vedic literatures. To hell with all our learning all the nonsense, you know, mundane knowledge that's there that after 10 years is actually totally obsolete, and no one will, they'll laugh if I actually quote it, you know. And to hell with our performing great sacrifice and observing all the rules and regulations. So perform, you know, to hell with all our great absorption and sinful activities and breaking every rule that there is, because I'm just a rat bag and all my friends are rat bags and everyone in my community is a rat bag. Okay, to hell with our family, but that I already said before anyway, and we don't really have a family, so yeah, that one doesn't change, yeah, like that. To hell with our expert service in performing the rituals exactly according to the description of the scriptures. You know, to hell with our not actually very expert application of whatever I've read in these modern self-help books, and that I don't actually do very well. Yeah. To hell with it all, like that, you know. Yeah, a lot, especially the family, right? For we have not developed transcendental loving service, like that. So it's the same principle has to be applied, but we see is that it's not actually very glorious. While here, they're Brahmins. You don't get any better than this. And then they see that that's not up to the mark. So if that's not up to the mark, it already includes all the, you know, two paisa, you know, positions that we are coming from. You know, the 100 rupees, you know, already includes the 2 paisa.
So from the association with devotees, it automatically comes to the point where people, they appreciate,
yes,
that connection, yes, of doing things.
Yes. It's just according to the individual how much time it'll take. So then it seems their agyata sukriti was quite good, but at the same time as the advanced position of their wives was such that that association produces so much more agyata sukriti, right? Because then these great devotees, then their association will have so much more potency than, let's say, someone who's not as advanced. But we see that so many devotees join because of that association with those who are not actually advanced, because what association are they giving They're giving the knowledge and the realization of Prabhupada and the Acharyas. So because of that, then you get the benefit of association by hearing. Yes. Jila Jiva Goswami comments, the Brahmins saw that their wives had extraordinary devotion to the Supreme Lord, Bhagavati, who attracts everyone's heart by manifestation of his powers. Not only did they repent, but giving up their pride, they condemned themselves. Their wives' devotion is called alaukikim, unworldly, since it did not depend on hopes in this world or swarga, and made them give up their bodies immediately on not attaining Krishna. Right? So they gave up that material concept. The Brahmana said, more to hell with. To hell with our threefold birth, right? So here, threefold, so we can understand what kind of Brahmins they were. These are Shrauta Brahmins. That's why he said great sacrifices. We don't mean someone's having a yajna in their courtyard or their house, according to your standard, you know, the Brahmanas and that. We're talking about the Shrauta Yajnas, because they would say, you know, being twice born. Because if they're born, then they get Upanayanam, so then they're twice born. But now they're initiated into the Shrauta Yajnas, so that's the third level. They're Dwijas. So that amongst Dwijas is a higher principle. So then they're, you know, quite well situated.
Yes. Compared to someone like Daksha, where are we here?
How tall they are?
Well,
what
no,
means,
he's engaged in
they would be working like this, and I think six of those, but no. Was it? Yeah, no, yeah, but then with Prajapatis, I think that they would use seven, so they're actually taller in proportion. Yeah. Their arms are longer.
That's there, also.
Like that. He has a goat head, they don't have a goat head.
No.
Like that. No,
true.
You know. Now that's cool, right? You could just see the guy walking into the conference, you know, the nice Armani suit, the whole thing, but with a goat head,
yes.
You know, like that.
And maybe one day.
Definitely everyone would stop to talk with this guy.
I'll remember him.
Yeah, no, they're definitely going to remember.
Maybe one day modern science will make it possible.
I doubt it. Like no, it's like this. When was Dr. Frankenstein?
Yeah, but 100 years ago?
More. I think it was like 200 years or 150.
Yeah.
You know, it's like in the late 1700s, right? You know? And so they've been talking about it since then.
True.
And so there's no zero progress.
Yeah.
You know? And at that time they thought they were on the cusp.
Yeah.
And so now they'll say, no, but we now know the DNA and this and that, we're on it, you know, but they'll always be on the cusp. You know, it's like coming of the age of Aquarius.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite make it.
You see it also with artificial intelligence. For the last 50 years, they've been saying in 10, 15 years, it'll be smarter than humans.
Yeah, and but the whole point is there's still someone who has to push the button.
Mm.
You know,
exactly.
Like that. I mean, if there's no smart, why doesn't the letter write itself, you know? But no, you have to write it. You know, so. Yeah.
So, Daksha.
Yes.
He's engaged in sacrifices for his own benefit.
But he seems to be doing the big ones. So
yeah,
then he'll be...
I'm thinking consciousness-wise. I mean...
It'll be about the same.
Same, yeah.
Yeah, but maybe not on that level of particular piety, but at the same time as on a level that they're devotees.
This seems.
I mean, they're born in Braj, so sure. Then they could come to this. So their Agyata Sukriti seems to be greater than Daksha's.
Yeah, it takes a little bit more work for...
You know, it's just like, let's say if you have a devotee who's totally into something mundane and doesn't worry about Krishna consciousness, then in the next birth they'll be born in that situation where they can totally get into that.
Yeah.
You know, like... So that's the whole thing, is that that's the point of that. If one has performed devotional service, but one wasn't so serious, serious meaning one was too easily distracted by the mundane desires, then you're going to get, at leaving the body, one goes to the heavenly planets. After that, one comes back and is born in the family of religious persons, Brahmins, pious persons, this kind of thing. So now they're born in this kind of situation.
Right. Yes.
Like that. But their wives had association with the other Brajabasis, and so then this brought them up to the pure devotional service. Well, the husbands didn't have that association, and so they didn't advance anymore. They just remained at that pious position. Now coming in contact and appreciating the devotion of their wives, now then that sparks and then they can move forward. So that's why being opposed to the Vedic culture, being too much, we just chant, we don't care for the rules, being too much unto pranamoy, these things are not recommended, because if it's you're following religious duties, then you could take birth in a Brahmin family. But if you're not into the religious duties, then that means you have to, you know, pranamoy is as good as it can get. So then that means it has to be in a non-Vedic, just wealthy family. They may be religious, but they won't know much about the philosophy. In other words, they won't be Shastric. And if we're always opposing the Shastric version, then that's equal to intoxication, that pride. Mm-hmm. So one will be born into proud families who do these things. Is that
so, yeah, so it would seem like Dakshas has a pride problem. These Brahmanas are more like distracted.
It's yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so it's just, but he's he doesn't revile the Vedas.
Mm.
He may revile the devotees, which is worse. But you know, like that. So then that's an insult to the Brahmins. I mean, then that's equal to killing a Brahmin, which is worse than intoxication. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it just means their position is less. So that's why they don't have goat heads.
Yes.
Okay. To hell with our threefold birth, our vow of celibacy, and our extensive learning. To hell with our aristocratic background and our expertise in the rituals of sacrifice. These are all condemned because we were inimical to the transcendental personality of Godhead. Footnote 21. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 40 to Bhagavad Arkamrithi Mala, chapter 14, analysis entitled Analysis of Unfavorable Conditions for Bhakti, Bhakti Pratikul Vichar, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. So the things they talk about, that's what's unfavorable. That they now have the mentality to understand that these are unfavorable, that's favorable. But the point is what they're describing is the unfavorable. So being attached to your birth, proud of your birth, proud of your vows, you know, your determination, your learning, your aristocratic background, your expertise in knowledge and application. In other words, overall, being a modern, you know, a professional, leave out the celibacy part. And like that. So it's a common thing like that. The BBT purport states the words tri vrid, janma, or threefold birth, refer to 1. Physical birth, 2. Brahminical initiation, and 3. Initiation of the performance of Vedic sacrifice. Everything is useless if one is ignorant of the absolute truth, the Supreme Lord Krishna. Right? So they were on, even amongst Brahmins, were elevated, but they missed the point of it. And the idea is that as you move up, it should be more obvious, since everything in the ritual there has some connection back to Vishnu. You should catch the point, you know. Or even with the second, you know, birth, then they're worshipping Shaligram Shila, which is Vishnu. You know, they should get the point. They should catch it. But somehow or another, because of material desire, they don't.
What is the significance of the third initiation?
Then you can do these big Vedic sacrifices. You want to do the Shrauta, you know, you want to do Ashrameda and all these others. You have to be initiated into that level of, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, that's the whole thing. It's just like you want to worship the deities, then you have to be initiated into that. So
there is only a specific sect or all types of Brahmins to get here?
No. That's what we said. All Brahmins have the second birth. But only those who are going to focus or specialize in the big yagyas, the Shrauta yagyas, then they'll have the third birth. So then they're Tweeja. Technically, we're Tweeja. Because you have the first birth, then there's Upanayanam, then there's the Pancharatrik. You know, so then you can work. Because they can do this, but they can't worship the deity in the temple. They have to initiate into that. It's a different system. So in the Vedic thing, you're initiated according to what you're doing. You're initiated into Rig Veda, then you study Rig Veda. Now, if you want to study Sama, you have to be initiated into Sama.
Mm-hmm.
right? So that's why you have the, you know, Vedi, Dvivedi, Trivedi, Chaturvedi. It means they're initiated into all four. Does that make sense? In his Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, "This pastime illustrates the fault of indifference towards Krishna arising out of pride due to high birth in the Varnashram system." Right? So now if we are indifferent to Krishna out of pride due to our high birth in the non-Vedic system, then that's even...
Arguably.
Yeah, arguably less.
Yes.
You know, now we're dealing in the paisa instead of in the... The Brahmanas continued, "The illusory potency of the Supreme Lord certainly bewilders even the great mystics. What to speak of us? As Brahmanas, we are supposed to be the spiritual masters of all classes of men. Yet we have been bewildered about our own real interests. Just see the unlimited love these women have developed for Lord Krishna, the spiritual master of the entire universe. This love has broken for them the very bonds of death, their attachment to family life." So, interesting. The bonds of death are attachment to family life. They're synonyms, you know. They say. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, "Though we are husbands or fathers-in-law and act as guru, the women have become successful and we have fallen in the blind well." That is expressed in this verse. Then quote, "They possess a love for Krishna which is impossible for us to understand. Just see their prema directed towards Krishna." End quote. Ha indicates that the women had symptoms of choked voice, shivering hairs, and standing on end. So they were, you know, like doing headstands and stuff like that. Yeah. So spontaneously, yoga. Just in the middle, just for no reason, just doing a headstand. I guess that's why English without punctuation just doesn't work. While in Sanskrit, the grammar, if you put it in orders, it does do, but technically you can move it around and it still works. But you know. Okay. So the swimmer has symptoms of choked voice, shivering, hair standing on end, and change of color. Okay.
The Oxford comma.
One may argue, right? So, see what was happening here? That they made the point. Now, then the opposition might. Right? Does that make sense? So it's all part of the ongoing thing.
Is that, we have recently, like, proper and improper way of doubting scripture or authority. So is this, can this kind of save us if we have a doubt that is kind of...
The point is that the doubt's based on Shastra and about a standard application of the Shastra. Then you could say technically the words of the question are correct.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that's the whole point is, in my experience, then you have certain ways that you do things, certain religious principles. And so that application is there. And now we come along where then it's said that that's all useless. So how is that useless? So does that mean we give it up, we don't do it, so that would be the appropriate thing? You know, you understand?
Yes.
Or how does that useless meant, that, you know, it means, so how do we have to adjust it?
Yes.
So then it's a matter of adjusting the consciousness. But if it's a matter of, we have a misgiving and we're using the Shastra against Shastra, we're not actually trying to move forward. It means we're going to do what we are going to do whether Shastra supports it or not. And if Shastra happens to support, great. You know, it's just like the businessman is going to sell whatever he's going to sell. And if it's somehow or another now is, let's say, the guy was... selling fertilizer, you know, organic fertilizer. And that's just what his family's been doing for the last 100 years. And so that's what they have. They got peat moss growing out in their backfield, so they're selling it. If it was urea, they'd be selling that, but it's not, it's peat moss. So they, for them, it was just a business. But now, organic is big. Now they can say, see, it's organic, it's this and that. But technically, they don't care. They're going to sell it anyway. You understand? So when we're using scripture, the support of scripture against scripture, then even though the wording of the question may be correct because there's a doubt in the application of the scripture, our intent actually is to break down, we don't care about either.
We're breaking down the authority.
Yes. So in that way, then you see the intent. So it's about what it is. Because here, the question it'll ask, one may argue, but it is improper for women to show love to those other than their husbands. Right? So that's the religious principle. Right? So then, but they did, so that's against that principle. So then, how is this going to be applied? Mm-hmm. Right? The husbands would reply, though the women should regard their husbands as guru, what can one say when the guru of the universe appears directly before them, right? So they're supposed to respect their husband as guru, but when guru above that is there, then naturally that works, because it's that transcendental aspect. Does that make sense? Okay. So the love for the guru of the universe immediately cut the bondage of death, attachment to husbands, sons, and house. And as we no longer see those attachments in them, they are our gurus. Right? Because then the devotional is the higher principle. As far as how the ritual goes, they're the guru, and they're the guru of, you know, everybody around, because they know, because as they said, they do them perfectly. In this case, they're not talking about them by pride, because you talk about them by pride when you're trying to establish your position. They're talking about it in condemning themselves. So then when you point out that how expertly you do things and condemn that, that means you are that expert. Right? And then that's useless, because it still doesn't allow you to know Krishna. Does that make sense? So on that, for that material knowledge and skill, they're still the gurus. But the purpose of that knowledge and skill, now their wives are the gurus. Right? So, in this way, the husbands began thinking as of their wives as gurus, not as their wives. So then it takes on a whole different flavor. So the point's being made, right? And the reasons are being given, right? So from that, then the opposition comes up with a doubt. So then they give their what they think should be the actual, point. And the reason, and then they're going to give the examples for why they do what they do, right? Unless it's just obvious, like this point here, it's like, you know, everyone knows that. So then you've already given that. So now you're already in the Udaharana, right? So now then you'll reply with your counter, right? But it's still within Udaharana. And that will go back and forth until all of their points have been defeated. Now you can show by rounding that up, summarizing how that all comes back into the points that you are making, and then now you make your conclusion again. This makes some sense how the argument works? Because sometimes it gets confusing on, no, but as soon as they give an argument. So, if you're focusing more on the argument part, like we see here, they're not giving the whole thing, then you just use those terms that deal with the argument. Right? You know, the Purva Paksha and that kind of thing. And then Siddhanta, because you're going through the whole thing, but you're only emphasizing the parts that are, because it's an argument. Does that make sense? But when you're making the full presentation, it does all the five. Because the argument, those who are, the opposition is also using those five. It's just that if you do well, they don't get to four and five. They only get to one, two, three. And then you absorb their 1-3 into yours in 4, and then you can go back to giving your conclusion. Yes.
Should we always present?
No, it's not necessary. If there's something that may come up, then you present the doubts. But if it's just very clear and logical, and when you're presenting, you see that the mood in the audience is very, whoever's there is very clear, very clean, then there's no need of doubts. Dealing with doubts. But if in doing that you get something on the edge or something, then you address that point. You know, because everyone else it's clear, but this for this person or group of persons that they may represent, then it'll be a doubt. So then you want to clear that. And the advantage is that the group that's there, then if they come in contact with that, then they may be distracted. So you already are answering that so they don't become distracted. But if there's an overwhelming positive mood and there's this one negative and it's flowing so nicely in the pot, you just continue with the positive. You don't address, you know, like that if nobody cares. But if it's kind of more just lighter, then you may do that.
Also, sometimes when the audience is general,
mm-hmm.
but you want to stir the thinking process, you can throw in some controversial things.
Yes, you can. Yeah, it's just a matter of what you want to get done. Mm-hmm. But that's the whole point, is in presenting your udaharna, you can yourself throw in the opposing arguments. You don't have to actually have a person there that's arguing. That's the whole point. The udaharna is the one where all that goes on. So the udaharna includes their opposing point, their opposing reasons, and their opposing examples and arguments. That's the point. The udaharna is the bulk of it. Right? Your point, that should be able to be said in a sentence. Or if the words aren't clear in the sentence, Prabhupada might use, you know, a couple of sentences because the word's not clear. But he can actually say it in one sentence. Then your reason, that may be a sentence or a few sentences, but it's very exact. Right? Then the Siddhanta, it's that, you know, like this, then this is that. So, like this, because one respects guru, husband's guru, and since Krishna is the supreme guru, they respected Krishna. Right? Then you're synthesizing it. You know? So therefore we find that they're respecting guru. Right? Then you're Siddhanta. They did not break the religious principles because the religious principles worship guru, they worship guru. Right? Does that make sense? So one has to have that respect for guru. So the beginning to the end two are actually quite short. The middle can be as big as you want. It can go on and on and on. It can have so many angles and this and that. Because the one point may have so many subdivisions. And so if in a particular discussion, dealing with just one aspect may be all that's necessary. And so you don't deal with more. But if you find that there's more things than this and that, you can bring them up. Or if you like, you want to make discussions, you bring them up. That'll cause, if that doesn't, you bring up the doubts. You know, if that doesn't work, then, try something else. You know, wow, what's that? And when they all turn around, throw a bucket of water on them. You know, do something, you know, that gets them thinking. You know. So, yeah.
It's interesting, sometimes if you argue the the wrong point for a long time,
they forget what the right point is.
Yeah, that's true. But then they kind of go along with it, and then you say, but actually that's all wrong. And then they get very curious as to what's going to happen now.
Okay,
it's
yes.
A nice way to...
Yes, whatever
exaggerate
works.
Exaggerate the wrong points. So
yes, but it also shows you know the points. Because
yeah.
Much of the time is they think, typically argument, you're arguing about the point and you don't know what the point is. It's just you don't like their shoes or something, you know, and so therefore, you know. So when you can put it out, that's why you see typically the Vedic system is that you can point out the glories of the other's position. Like if they say like this, but is it proper for women to show love to those other than their husbands? And then you say, yes, this is correct.
Yes.
Like that. And you go through and show this quote from Shastras and all that. But then why is it? Because the husband is guru.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like that, and this and that, and they show how the husband's guru and all that, you know, as you're doing this, the pride of everyone is there, it's just inflating, inflating, they're starting to bump into each other because they're getting so inflated, like that, you know, you have to turn off the fans, otherwise, you know, their hair's going to get caught in the fan, and, you know, it's all happening, and then you show position of guru and that, and then, you know, within guru, then this is that, you know, and then you have gurus and this, and then you start to go beyond them. Once you've done all the glories, then you go beyond that. And so then this is this, and because it's going in that, and they go along with it.
Exactly.
Because it is Shastra. They do know that. And so therefore, then you bring it back and show, therefore, you know, they were worshipping Krishna, and so then, it's like, whoop.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did with the Kasa Goswami.
Yeah,
first
exactly.
He glorified Brahmins, because we glorify Brahmins.
Yeah.
But then showing that the Vaishnava is the perfection of the Brahman, and then that's, you know, because what can they say? Because
no, exactly.
You've already said all the arguments that they would make.
And they've already agreed on it.
Yeah, and you've just saved yourself hours by, you know, spending that, you know, 5-10 minutes presenting all their points and glorifying them.
It's all comfortable.
Yeah, so it's a standard, cultured way of dealing, you know, like that. Otherwise, you can use the more direct and practical nigrahastan, you know, but sometimes that is appreciated and sometimes not. You know, I could say back in the, you know, 60s, 70s, that was, you know, and even in the 80s, that was, yeah, in the 70s, it was the appreciated, you know, no nonsense, just straight to the point. But starting in the 80s, then the need for appreciating one's cultural attachments and you know, tiptoeing around those, you know, came into existence when they were then voiced very clearly and boldly in the 90s. You know, so then like that, then you have, so this technique it works all the time. So you can say all strong things, but you're saying it so pleasantly and in such a nice logical way and in consideration of the other that then it leaves nothing for. But to do that naturally requires good character. You know, that's the weak point of it. You know, so you can say it's a technique, but the problem is you require the mode of goodness to be able to do that. Actually, pure goodness is better.
Yeah.
You know.
The different verses, you know, if you've seen in the explanations that has been given by the acharyas, you find that this
verse 15.
No, any verse for that matter.
Oh, any verse, okay.
Given, you find that the five angas are many times been discussed, you know. So we find all the five points been discussed many times.
Yes, no, it's the standard that'll be discussed.
Yeah, so every verse may have a different pratibhya, and the conclusion will also be given.
Yes, and then they'll always, in that conclusion, it also includes the sandhi with the next points.
Yes, it does include.
Yeah. So it's not just a point on its own. It's a point being made in a progression of points. So one anuchana is done in that way. That's how it defines it's an anuchana. So sometimes one verse has all five, or it takes many verses to establish all that. But that anuchana is only the preliminary for the next one. Does that make sense? Anuchana, not anuchana. Anucheda. Yeah, anucheda. Yeah, it goes forward.
Yeah.
Like that. And so like that, it progresses. You know, so then even those will be, you know, establishing the point, you know, giving you like this. So it's the same principle in smaller and bigger, like that. So, but that's always the way it's done. So unless it's a note on something that's already been explained, then you may not have to give the full that full presentation. Okay. It's the same group as yesterday. Oh well, it's the same time. Yeah, maybe I guess they just go to the goshal and see the cows and stuff. The brahmanas continued. These women have never undergone the purificatory rites of the twice-born classes, nor have they lived as brahmacharis in the ashram of a spiritual master. Nor have they executed austerities, speculated on the nature of the self, followed the formalities of cleanliness, or engaged in pious rituals. Nevertheless, they have firm devotion to Lord Krishna, whose glories are chanted by the exalted hymns of the Vedas, and who is the supreme master of all masters of mystic power. We, on the other hand, have no such devotion for the Lord, although we have executed all these processes.
What does it mean over here that follow the formalities of cleanliness?
Means doesn't mean that they're not clean, it's the formalities of cleanliness. You know what I'm saying? Is that you do something, you wash, but then you have the aspects of wash, you know, taking the water, chanting the mantras, then you're purifying yourself and, you know, all the Oma Pavitra, like all that kind of jazz, and then, you know, all the different kinds of things that are there. So the standard just water, that's there. You know, they may, using the toilet, then they'll wash and everything like that, and hands, mouth, feet, everything nicely. Then they'll come out of the bathroom, and then in the outside tap, then they'll wash again. Then they go into the house. You may have that level of cleanliness. Mm-hmm. So they're very, very careful about how they do anything. Mm-hmm. Right? But
this is performed on a daily basis.
Hmm?
On a daily basis.
Yes, but it's not the formalities of the technical ritualistic aspects of cleanliness. So those things they're not doing, because those are only part of the ritualistic aspect, you know, yagyas and stuff, so they don't have that. So you're taking the, you know, the pot with the coconut and sprinkling the water with mantras and the fire. They don't do those things. Okay, footnote 22. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verses 43 to 44 to Bhagavad Arkamrithi Mala, chapter 6, entitled Tasting the Sublime Nature of Relationships with the Lord, Bhagavat Rasa Tattvam, which is in the Sambandha section of the Thakur's book. Right, so the point is why is this happening? Because of the taste. So it's not based on any of these rituals, it's just the taste of Krishna. Knowing about Krishna, discussing about Krishna, being absorbed in Krishna, that gives the taste. That's then why one moves forward. It's not that the taste that they have for the knowledge, the skills, all the different ritualistic aspects, the mode of goodness aspects, that's why they're inspired to do what they do. Because if they do something less, they feel bad. Does that make sense? So that keeps them doing their proper things of cleanliness and rituals and all these things. But we see that the wives of the Brahmins, that's not the reason. They're doing it just because Krishna is so nice. The taste of just the connection to Krishna is so great. So, yeah?
So at this point we see both surrender. But then the ladies, their surrender is very natural.
Yes.
And the Brahmanas is very intellectual surrender.
Yes.
They analyze the whole thing and they got it together finally, and yeah, that's what we should be doing.
Yes.
So it's not exactly the same, apparently.
No, because it's also the difference in the mentality. Like we said, for the men, because the main, you could say, in the process of engaging the mind, the intellectual part will be the more prominent in the masculine nature, while the acceptance and rejection aspect will be more prominent in the feminine nature. So for women to go from material absorption to spiritual absorption, then is very easy. They don't have to cross. They don't have to bring themselves to the point of the spiritual neutrality and then take up spiritual positive. They don't have to go from positive, or they say the negative in the material, then to the neutral, then to positive. They just go from negative to positive. Right? So that's all. So here, even in this, even if the woman considers all the things she's done as useless, she's tasting the uselessness of it. Well, they're looking at it intellectually. So even the women say the same things, that the approach is different. That's why if the environment is such that the opportunity is there to take up Krishna consciousness and it's nice and it's attractive, then generally they'll take that because it's the higher principle. So it's just a matter of whatever is attractive more. So if material is more attractive, then they'll get into that. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, the beauty is, let's say, how much you are dressing in a Vedic way and behaving in a Vedic way, and that's considered the standard of beauty, then all the girls are going to do that. But if the standard of beauty is something modern, then they're going to do that. So it's whatever is the best. So if Krishna consciousness is the best, they'll do that because it's the best. While men, it'll have to intellectually, they'll have to consider and figure out how it's the best. So it's just the difference in the nature of how men and women work. Yes.
So, based on that, can we say that the Raga Mukha Sadhana actually is more natural for ladies?
No, it's more natural for the soul. But the point is they may take it up, but then the point is without direction, how do they know when it's Raganuga, and well, how do they know when it's just sentiment?
Because we've seen many examples then, you know, what is presented as if it is Raganuga Sadhana, it's actually continuation of the Partiva Ras of the ladies.
Yes, that's what I was saying, is that without proper guidance, then it won't. Now, if they're in an environment of natural, real Raganuga, they can take it up much more easily. But the men, they have to see that it's actually right, then they'll take it up. So in other words, for women, whatever gives the higher taste is what they're going to take. That's why whatever you want them to do, make it nice. So when you make it austere for the women, that because that works for the men, because if it's austere, you stop looking at the material, and so therefore then maybe you'll agree to the spiritual. Then that works nicely for them, but it doesn't work for the women. The women, you just have to create a nicer, you know, it's like, okay, you have a room, you have a nice couch. Okay, great. You know, some side tables, some nice lamps. It's nice, you know, as opposed to something else. Now, if I just have some funky mattress on the ground and a couple of pillows and not like that, and the bed sheet's not covered so nicely, it doesn't look so nice, you're going to take the couch. But now, if you put down a nice Persian rug and all these nice silk-covered pillows and this and that, incense burning and very nice lighting from lamps and all that, which you're going to take? You understand? So it's whatever's better, that's all. So that's the thing. In the Vedic, then the tradition is you take the Vedic culture and present it better, and then it's just going to be taken. So all this stuff that we're going to go against that, then how is that in any way, shape, or form an advantage? So in other words, they don't know the nature of everyone. At the same time as those who would do this generally tend to think themselves liberal, and then they feel that they're more supportive of women when they're absolutely not. They don't know the nature, they don't know what they're dealing with. And so then the women aren't satisfied because they're not going to provide them with a fancy couch either. They're just going to deal with it from a masculine point of view, so technically they actually don't even care. You know, if it will be appreciated, then you make the noise, but if it's not, you're not going to. In other words, if you can get away with doing whatever you do, you will do that. And then, but if you have to act in a particular way, you will. But only because you have to. Otherwise, you just act, you know, just as, you know, the guys down at the pub. You know, so that's the thing, is it's not actually cultural. So that's why it probably says cultural revolution. You know, if we're talking about community, what makes a community?
Common values.
Yes, common values. And who has to accept those common values for them to be common values?
Ladies.
Yeah. So unless it's favorable to women, you don't have community. You can have a temple and it's favorable to men, or a gurukul is favorable to men, and that'll work.
A mutt.
Yeah, a mutt. But you can't have an ashram. You can't have a community, you know, unless it's favorable to the women. So then, if all the cultural aspects, the refined cultural aspects of the Vedic culture are there and are practiced, then we see it's accepted. Who doesn't want to eat better, look better, you know, talk better, interact better? But we're rejecting all that. Oh, as Westerners, we can't do this. Oh, we can't eat nice food, or we can't dress nicely. Because it says, no, but we, you know, we don't have to. We're dressed nicely, you know, dressed casual. It says, who wears, in high society, who wears dressed casuals to dinner? You wear your dinner jacket. It's a kind of, you know, formal suit. It just has a slightly different, the lapels are different. You know, the cut's different. So are they doing that? And then it becomes a whole thing. Then all those, then everybody knows that. In that kind of scenario, all the women, all the men, they know all the same culture. They all know how someone's dressed, how someone's behaved, and all that. But when you come down into the modern thing, you don't know what to say or what to behave. You actually don't, because, you know, you say the stuff and then they react badly, then you have to rethink, do I want to hang out with these people? So there isn't community. You know what I'm saying? So when there's common culture, that's when there's community. And the only culture that's universal is the Vedic. The modern is not universal at all.
It's not even culture.
Yeah, it's not even culture, let alone universal. Yeah, so and where you can apply it, you know, what you do is like, you know, you're in a public place and talking loudly and all that and kind of crass. Does that work for, let's say, does that work for any culture in the world other than one? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. So how is it universal? You know? I remember once this was, we had the president here in Mayapur. Then, he used to like his American food. So you make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. You have his milk and cookies in the afternoon. You know, do that kind of jazz. Yeah, right, exactly. Dipping them and all that. And so then at one point, some elderly French couple visited Mayapur, just, you know, not devotees. And, you know, he personally took them around because the local boys wouldn't know what to do, and then they'll end up with fat rice and some chilies, and it's not going to work out. So he took them around, gave them the tour, this and that, brought them back to his place, and gave them, I think, like that, milk cookies and a, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And then he's saying, how do you like it? You know, thinking that they'll be in ecstasy because, you know, they don't have to eat the Indian food. And then the Frenchman said, no, I remember eating this when... Back during the Second World War, when the Americans were, you know, occupying France, you know. In other words, he was, you know, trying to be pleasantly, you know, it's like saying, you know, how was the meal? Yes, it was quite filling, you know, trying to present something negative in a positive way, you know. So, yeah, that's the whole thing. It's not as universal as is presented to be. You know, so that's the thing, is the culture, the Vedic's the only one that everybody can follow, because you can say, but we can't follow it. But look at Vedic culture, Rakshasas, Yakshas, Kanaras, Apsaras, Siddhas, you know, Devatas, Asuras, you know, Daityas, Dhanavas, they can all follow it. Why they're following it, now there'll be a difference in purpose, but they all follow it. Yes.
You say there's a fundamental misunderstanding in that we think that if we're not following every little letter of that law every time, that means we're not following. I hear that sometimes from devotees, like they come up with some extreme example of some far.
It's always extreme. When they bring up the extreme example, then try this, go say, I don't quite get it. Do you have another example?
Yeah.
Because they won't have one.
They will be blank.
They will always the same That's extreme the example that everyone have, uses. Yeah.
So if you can't follow that, then everything's thrown out.
Yeah. So then if you can't follow one thing in the modern, then the whole modern's thrown out?
If you get a traffic ticket. You know, you're done driving for the rest of your life or something, I don't know.
Yeah, but do you have that other than...
No, that exactly.
Yeah,
it only applies to that.
Yeah, it only applies to, like, Holland or something, you know. You know. So that's the thing, is they always use the extreme, because that's what we mean, it's not a correct question, because it's not about understanding the Vedic version, it's about defeating and throwing out the Vedic version.
So it's a Yavana mentality.
It's a Yavana mentality. And who are the original Yavanas?
Greeks.
Huh? The Greeks. Yeah. And of all the Greek architecture, what's the most famous? The Pantheon. We will stop at that point. Yes.
We've noticed that, you know, in previous cantos, man taken as a main example of any pastime.
Mm-hmm.
But the 10th canto is very feminine, actually. We see the Nagapatnis, the wives of the Brahmanas, we'll see the gopis, we'll see the, you know, Dwarkavasis, and Mother Yashoda. It's very feminine,
Because it's the higher rasa. Means your parental rasa of mother and father, mother's going to be prominent. And then a conjugal rasa, then, you know, according to the tradition, it's the women will be prominent. Right? So the principle remains. So that's going to be there. And then friendship is a natural support of that. So those three. So you'll see these three will be prominent. Coward boys are prominent, but the intensity is not so great. Most all these pastimes all throughout, the coward boys are practically in every pastime. But the prominence of it, the intensity is not as great as these other two. So therefore, if you have coward boys and Mother Yashoda, Mother Yashoda will stand out. You know, or coward boys and the gopis will stand out. Does that make sense? So it's just the intensity is deeper, therefore that's why it's there. But you see, so in Dwarka, you'll see that with the queens and that, but you also see with Uddhava and the others, you know, the friendship is there. But those ones will stand out because they're just the higher rasas, they're more intense. So while in the previous, in the first nine cantos, you're showing how to elevate yourself up to the platform of, you know, Anandamaya, how you're always absorbed in service to Krishna. How getting there, then within that platform, then these higher are there. So until you get to that platform, then the Shanta and Dasya are easier to digest, and it's easier to see the difference between what you're doing. I'm serving the family, I'm serving the deity. That's more obvious, you know, how you do things. I'm using money for the family, I'm using money for the deities. So you can see very easily. But once you get up into friendship, parental and conjugal, then that aspect of the Lord being God is not there anymore. You can't fall back on that. Now it's just a matter of, as Bhagavan, then that sweetness aspect, or that mix of sweetness and Aishwarya. But before that, you can have just Aishwarya, so it's easier to appreciate. So that's why you use that, because you use the simpler examples to have the understanding. But after 9 cantos of that, then one is introduced to how to appreciate these higher aspects. And having underappreciated here in Braj, then going on to Dwarka, then it's you know, quite easy. Does that make sense? Yeah, but parental means it's original is Braj. So the relationships are originally Braj, then you come back to Dwarka. Because if we gave Dwarka, then it would always be we comparing Braj to Dwarka. But we don't want to do that. It's Braj is there. And then Dwarka is glorious. What it is, you can compare it to Braj. So,
can you also say that the Brahmanas could benefit from the wives being devotees because they were actually taking care of the wives as women, like they were doing their duties, and that were respecting that those living entities, and therefore when they became devotees, then they could also benefit from that.
Yes, it means they're taking care and all that. So it means they see themselves as servant of. The point is the husband's taking care of the wife, but you don't bring out the aspect that he's the servant, though actually he is, right? In other words, if there is attachment, there's submission, right? But it's only brought out on the woman's side. But if the husband's attached to the wife, there's submission. Otherwise, then how do you maintain the attachment? How do you cultivate and nourish, right? Does that make sense? So, since the areas that they're working in are different, the man's working in the areas of, you could say, the sambandha aspects. And so, therefore, he's providing the facility of the sambandha and working those aspects to produce the results. Then you'll say, you know, that he's the leader in it, right? But why are you doing that is because of the experience you'll get. That's where the women lead. That's their field. They control that field. Right? Does that make sense? But in the material world, since it's about the external rather than the internal, then that comes out as more prominent. And so that's brought out in that way. Yeah. I've asked about that. Yeah, no, just on that one point, it's just an interesting side point. I ask about that. And except in India, I mean, other cultures of the world, there's a common kind of thing where I know, where they have an old saying. I heard about it when I think it was first in, maybe it was Croatia or something. And then wherever other countries I was in, I asked, and they all said they have a saying like that. Though, you know, there'll be some slight difference. Is that a husband is an orphan that their mother got tired of taking care of. You know, like that. So it seems to be very common. But I mentioned in India, and in India it's not at all the idea. No, the husband's not that. He means he's a man, so he takes care.
Maybe because his mother is not tired yet.
So he's not an orphan yet. Okay, good point, good point. Okay. Yeah, in other words, he grew up into a man, so the mother's still happy to take care, while the other ones, they don't grow up, so the mother gets tired. Very good point. Yes, okay.
Yeah, there's a reading in what Sāsara passed down, that Bhakti Sāsara says that no parent can spiritually train their own, no parent's entitled to spiritually train their own child. So it's just like, if your husband is a child, then he cannot benefit spiritually from that wife who is like a mother.
That's a really good, really good twist. You understand? See, in other words, there's this very far out, very practical, direct intelligence that the women use. It's clever, because it's just very practical. but it's practical in the area of how the emotions work. Well, the men think in the mechanics of the thing, like that. So that's why when they do deal in this way of being practical and blunt, it's so much more blunt than actually the men in the point. Men make it blunt by, you know, various, what do you call it? How you say?
Language
and yes, yes. The elements of embellishments in the language that they use. Yeah. Yes, so that's why you see is that they themselves could not take advantage of their wife as guru before that. Even though their wives were devotees and they could have gotten benefit, they couldn't because of that, you know, they were unable to. So only then when they were able to appreciate it by seeing, then they could take advantage. Because the whole point is for Vaishnavas, they see everybody else as guru anyway. So there's always something to learn and gain. Because when it comes to devotion, then that is the field where the women excel. Men can, but I'm saying just women naturally, so then why one wouldn't learn those things? You know, it doesn't mean that they come to them and ask them, how do you do this ritual? Or no, that they don't do. You know, in other words, you have to know the fields. So the man technically knows how to do all these things, and the women, they know how emotions and relationships work. So that's the combination. Now, it's not that some women don't know one and men don't know the other, but it's just that that's the general areas that you function within. Right? So, that. You know, in other words, if cleaning the house or cooking or washing clothes is simply a mechanical thing that needs to get done as part of, you know, you have a job to do, and so, you know, everybody has a career, and because everyone has a career, but you still have to live and you need clean clothes, you need kind of this, you need food, that it's just part of, you know, the support of your career, then you can look at it, okay, so who does what and how much and who cooks on, you know, husband cooks on these days of the week, the wife cooks on these days, or, you know, all that kind of stuff, or, you know, she washes this, he washes that, but, you know, his sports stuff, that's so stinky, he's going to wash that, right? You know, she's not washing it. You know, and stuff like that. You can work out because it is just mechanics. It's only the field. And since both are trying to function in that area. Does that make sense? But if you're looking at it as the woman is thinking about how her family and doing something and support of her family and taking care of her family, then it's relationships, so naturally she'd want to cook, clean, do all these different things. But if it's not, the family's not about relationship, it's just about, then you could look at it from these modern kinds of view. Because you see, there's animals that they don't take care of. Like for lions and tigers, who takes care of the cubs?
The mother.
The male never does. Absolutely doesn't. It just doesn't happen. It's not even he, you know, takes care for a while, or you know, if there's any, you know, coochie, nothing. It's absolutely nothing. So you do have those in the culture, and they're, you know, they respect it. They're, you know, quite professional, you know, like that. You know. So you know, it's not like sloths or something, you know, like that. So you know, so that's the thing is that it's you have to see it in the context. So in human life, since the emphasis is on relationships and of relationships on the transcendental platform, like that. So minimum, you're keeping relationships based on religious principles. So the swargiya rasa is your standard of dealings in the human culture. But the purpose is actually vaikuntha rasa. So in cultures that partiva rasa is the standard. And all that, and they militate against these other aspects, then you're dealing with animal society. You're not dealing with human life. Human form of life, yes, but not human life. Like that. So does this work? Yeah, okay. So anyway. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanam.
What do you say to a woman in the West who asks you, how do you find a proper husband? really figured out what the answer to that question.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you could try an old, tried and true cliche.
Pray to Krishna.
Yes, it's called. What do you say? I think the. If I, I'm not sure if I'm getting the wording right, but go east, young woman. Something like that. Another thing is this: all women got together and agreed on what is the actual standard, and demand that. Then all the men would adjust very quickly. It's because they do marry them as the slobs they are. Therefore, they what's the need to adjust? But if the women wouldn't marry the men like this, because you just they just give a list. This is why you're not. And all women said that because the man will say, okay, you say that, but all the other women will take me. But nobody will take you. Then men, you'll see. 3 to 6 months, all the men will adjust. They'll all be talking the talk, walking the walk. It'll all happen. And they'll be proud of it.
Yes.